Okay, welcome back. Hour number three. We're rolling right along. Mitchell Henderson is back with us tonight, who has been watching this, as we all have, and putting the pieces together as he sees fit. Welcome back, Mr. Henderson. How are you?
Good to be here. Good to be here.
Yeah. Glad to have you. So, as we see, as the days roll by like leaves in the wind, we're seeing more and more what are obviously suspect and suspicious videos and storylines being dropped upon all of us who are trying to do serious inquiry work into the murder of Charlie Kirk. So it's pretty nutty out there. I just got a video of Mrs. Charlie Kirk in her music video days. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I'll be posting that tonight.
I think I got a copy of that also.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so, it's look, I'm sorry, but it is what it is, okay? I'm not going to hide any of it. It's a fact.
Well, here's the thing is you know, there's a two-prong thing that happens when any of these things happen. The first thing is it's up to the FBI to create the official narrative, okay? Now, I'm not saying that it's their job to investigate and find out the truth. That is far from what their job is. Their job is to go in and create the narrative that serves the purpose of the government and the people in power, okay? Sort of like if you remember when they had the Las Vegas shooting, this is many years ago now.
Do you remember the FBI agent
standing there roaring over the sheriff of Las Vegas County or Clark County? I mean, he was there.
She was right behind Joe Lombardo, the sheriff, literally arm's distance. Lombardo was getting more and more nervous and sweaty and fidgety in every video he had every news conference he had to allow to be recorded in video. He didn't like it because he was spewing lies. And the FBI made damn sure he didn't deviate. And they promised him the governorship, I'm sure of it. And he's governor of Nevada now. Former Sheriff Lombardo.
If you remember also what had happened is a few days later, the FBI raided the home of the shooter in Reno, okay? Did it take him Paddock's home in Reno. And remember, somebody had conveniently burglarized that home before the FBI could get there.
That's correct.
And they took all the computer equipment, hard drives, everything away, right?
Yeah.
So they probably knew about his home on day one. Why did it take them 3 days to
go? Of course they did. Absolutely.
You can see with these inconsistencies. You can see inconsistencies right now. I mean, right now you realize that there many, 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 many people are very skeptical of this Tyler Robinson doing it. I mean, almost on day one, people were coming out saying that he's a patsy. I think George Galway, this British Workers' Party politician, he immediately said that. He said, this man is a patsy. This is not who shot him, you know. And he gave logical reasons for why he was a patsy. He was a patsy because the FBI had decided who was going to get the blame and who they were going to attack, okay? Now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that they decided this on the day. They actually put that man in the place to be the patsy. He was planned and he was put there beforehand. They knew who he was going to be, who it was going to be long before the trigger was pulled, okay? And of course, he didn't pull the trigger. Here's the thing. It's lack of experience and lack of knowledge that allows them to fool people or think they can fool people. Okay, but sometimes I think, don't they realize that there's some people that will be wiser, that this will see holes in their story? For example,
they don't care because they control the media and they control reality that way. Sure.
I've been shot at many times. I've been shot at with rifles from long distance. I've been shot at with pistols from short distance. I've been shot at with rifles from short distance. Okay. But not pistols from long distance, because that's pretty ineffective. But but the thing is if you're on the receiving end of a bullet, not once or twice, but hundreds of times throughout your life, you know what? You're just going to know. You're going to know what it sounds like. You're just going to know, okay? You're going to know through experience, all right? So, for example, I know if I'm being shot at with an AK-47 or a M16. I know if I'm being shot with a 7.62 NATO or a 7.62 times 39 Warsaw.
Now, remember, for everyone out there, when Mitchell's describing this, he doesn't hear the audio gunshot. The bullet will whiz by him, and then he'll hear the gunshot, unless it's within 20, 30 feet. So he doesn't hear anything. He hears this whiz, whoosh, whatever, and clunk, maybe if it hits something.
The bullet is makes like a little crack when it goes by, because when the bullet is going by, it's breaking the sound barrier.
The speed of sound. It's hypersonic.
So it's breaking the sound barrier.
Yeah.
But the bullet's going faster than sound. Keep this in mind. The bullet goes faster than sound. So when the rifle shoots, when they fire the rifle, okay, the noise of firing the rifle, the report of the rifle, in other words, is traveling at the speed of sound, but the bullet is traveling faster. So you're going to hear the bullet whiz by before you hear the report of the rifle that fired it. This is at a distance. If it is up close to you, well, the sound gets to you pretty. You're not going to be able to tell a big difference between when the bullet whizzes by and the sound hits you. So what I hear from the tape, that's the video and the sound that's on the stage with Charlie. Okay, this is what I go by, because I listened to all kinds of tapes from all different positions and stuff, but the definitive one is where I know what bullets sound like, and that's at the receiving end, okay, or close nearby the receiving end. So what I heard very distinctly was a pistol shot. This was not a rifle shot.
Okay, a pistol round. How's that?
Yeah.
A pistol round.
Yeah.
Pistol shot.
Yeah, this was a pistol firing. This was a pistol firing. This was not a rifle from 200 yards. That's not what I heard. I heard a pistol go off.
Absolutely. Okay. So did the guy right next to it, the guy in the white shirt and the white hats, right behind to our left of the brown shirt man. He heard a pistol. He flinched instantly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I heard a pistol, too. Okay, now I'm saying this because I've heard so many pistols. I've heard this so many times. Okay, it's forget about even me being at the receiving end of people shooting at me. There's also the thing of how much time did I spend at the range. You know, I was in the Army Marksmanship Training Unit for a year. They spent on me alone $80,000 for ammunition alone on me in that year. That's a lot of shooting. And this was rifle shooting, pistol shooting, and machine gun shooting. Okay?
Uh-huh.
A year of this. Plus, throughout my military career, nothing but rifle firing, pistol firing. My police career, pistol firing. Well, mostly pistol firing. Some rifle. Some shotgun firing, but listen, I know the sound. It's just like anything else. If you're always exposed to it, you just know
it. I thoroughly understand.
And based on that, this was a pistol that shot Charlie Kirk. Okay, and based on the film that you showed me, okay, there's two parts to this. One is the film of the brown-shirted guy. Okay, one is the film of what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's the pistol shot. It's sort of obvious that is the pistol shot right there. The second thing is just as important. Who was this man? Okay, let me get into this a little bit because this is important. Okay, so this man was an Irving, Texas police officer on the SWAT team. So he knows how to shoot.
Excuse me, Mitch. I have his name, his background, his identity.
Yes.
I have not released that yet. And I'm not sure which. There are a couple of stories out there about his identity. Is yours claiming that his name is Tyler?
Well, we don't have to get into that because the picture of the guy, I've seen that guy speaking to somebody. Okay.
Yeah, I know who he is.
Okay, so this guy was a Irving, Texas police officer. He was a, and the reason I'm not going to say his name is because he's never going to be arrested. He's never going to be charged.
Never. No, never.
Okay,
got
never.
It. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're covering for him. So anyways, when he retired, he went to Guatemala on a church mission, okay?
And I sent you this stuff. Just, I remember now. This is what I sent you. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So he went to Guatemala on this church mission, and the church mission was to train Guatemalan police military, okay, as sort of first responders and stuff. And I want the audience to understand, Guatemala was the second country to recognize Israel. The relationship between Guatemala and Israel is extremely tight. The Israeli army is who trains the Guatemalan army, Guatemalan police, Guatemalan intelligence, okay? They've done this for a long time. I personally have been involved in this whole thing in Guatemala, okay? Because the Guatemalans, the Israelis sold the Guatemalans some helicopters, okay, that they weren't supposed to sell them because the Israelis had the end user certificate. And I was involved in this process involving the BCCI bank money laundering and all this for Israel to do this, which was against U.S. law, whatever. Okay, so here's the point that I want to draw this picture for you, and this picture is very clear. Guatemala was accused of genocide, the kind of things that the Israeli military had Guatemala do so the Indian people were the people, the Indians up in the Maya Indians in the mountain were the people that were the problem because they demanded to have a life, okay? So the best thing to do was exterminate them, which this is the solution that Israel provided for or encouraged Guatemala to practice. Okay, to get the everyday person against the guerrillas and against these Indian people up in the hills, what they did is they did black propaganda. Okay, I was there, I know about this black propaganda. So what they did is they got Guatemalan soldiers to dress up like guerrillas, stop buses on the highway, and execute men, women, and children to blame on the guerrillas. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Not only did they do this, they got caught doing this. Okay. So this is the kind of, there is no low-down, dirty, immoral, rotten thing the Israelis will not do. Okay. There's nothing they will not do. They have zero morality, zero moral compass, zero moral force. It is do whatever you have to do to get the job done. Okay. The ends justify the means. Okay, this is Karl Marx that said this. Karl Marx is in the Communist Manifesto. He said the ends justify the means. This is classical Marxist warfare. And the Israelis argued to the Guatemalans that these are Marxist guerrillas you're fighting. You have to fight like they fight. And this created a genocide in Guatemala. Are we surprised that they're doing a genocide in Gaza now? Should we be surprised? This is what they've taught other nations to do. Okay, so let me go a little bit step further. Okay, the church that Charlie Kirk belongs to is Calvary Chapel. Okay, the missionary church stuff in Guatemala is Calvary Chapel. Okay, so let me just tell you something. about Calvary Chapel. Calvary Chapel is a Christian, an extreme Christian Zionist thing. Okay, I have a cousin that goes to Calvary Chapel. Okay, you can be a sincere Christ obedient Christian, but if you do not worship Israel, you are going to hell, and you are not a Christian. Okay, my cousin and her family won't have anything to do with me because I told them I will not worship Israel. Israel is not like Christ is coming back. He's coming back for Christians, not for Jewish people. Okay, and so let's go into this dispensationalist theology, which is what Christian Zionism is. It is one of the big proponents of this was Hal Lindsey and his late great planet Earth.
Oh yeah, I remember.
So let me tell you what Hal Lindsey said about people who do not worship Israel, who do not believe that Israel is the reason for Christ's return. He said that you are anti-Semitic, demonic, and a heretic. This is very strong, okay? So to my cousin, I'm demonic, anti-Semitic, and a heretic to my cousin. Yeah. Okay, to this guy who shot Charlie Kirk had become anti-Semitic, demonic, and a heretic.
Yeah.
Okay, is it okay to kill a heretic? Can you morally kill a heretic?
It's a duty to do. Yes, according to the Talmud. You're supposed to kill.
So,
they need to die. I had Hal Lindsey on the program, come to think of it. He was quite a character. Yeah, long time ago.
Well, listen, I'll tell you, in 1970 in high school, it was a required reading in my English class. And
the late great Planet Earth?
Yes, that was required reading.
Funny.
This is in Memphis, Tennessee in high school.
Yeah.
And from that day until just about 3 years ago, a little bit further back than 3 years ago, I started questioning it. But by 3 years ago, I was like totally rejected all of that dispensationalism stuff. I saw the reality and stuff. The thing that made me start questioning Christian Zionism was at the end of Revelations, it says very specifically, do not add anything to this book and don't take anything away. But keep in mind that this is the book of Revelation. It's talking about the book of Revelation. It's not talking about the whole Bible, because when that was written, there wasn't a whole Bible for it to be talking about. So it's talking about don't add anything to Revelation and don't take anything away. Well, if you've ever read the late great Planet Earth and dispensationalism and their whole theory, or even the Left Behind series by Jenkins and these people, let me tell you, what they do is they take Old Testament stuff out of Ezekiel and Isaiah and Daniel, and this is how they interpret Revelation. So Revelation, in the way that they spell it out and the way that the late great Planet Earth spells it out, is all laid out according to Old Testament, like Daniel, Ezekiel, Isaiah stuff. Okay, so I realized at some point that they're adding all these things to Revelation in order to explain it in their way. So that was the first crack in the wall there. I said, well, wait a minute. You know, if I just read Revelation by itself, I get a different take on it than what they're trying to tell me, right? So realize that makes me into an anti-Semite, a heretic, and a demon, okay? And I know that because relatives that go to Calvary Chapel, although they at first thought I was a sincere Christian, they came to realize I was a heretic when I did not bow down and worship Israel. Okay, and I argued with them. I said, hey, it's this simple. 1 John 2:22-23 says it very clearly. If you do not acknowledge Christ, you are Antichrist. Israel does not acknowledge Christ, they are Antichrist. It also says in that thing, If you do not have the Son, you do not have the Father. God is not on Israel's side. God is not on Judaism's side. He's not on their side. Okay. He says they're not on, he's not on their side. Very clearly he says that. But once people are deluded and believe something, well, it's just hard to, it's just impossible to get them off of it. It's, you know, the, this is even in prophecy that in times there'll be this false religion that even the elect will be fooled by it. And this I believe to be Christian Zionism. I mean, let's look at who they worship. 666, the Star of David, 6 points, six triangles, six inner anger, 666. It's smacking you in the face that Israel is the Antichrist, okay? So, anyway,
it certainly is. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to, what this whole diatribe of mine has been about is it goes to not just motive, but it goes to the motive that the shooter had to kill Charlie Kirk, because Charlie Kirk was questioning the Antichrist. Charlie Kirk was no longer just towing the line of the Antichrist, and Charlie Kirk had taken millions of dollars from the Antichrist for Turning Point USA. And it would be a disaster if he went against Israel. Would be disastrous, because only 24% of college Republicans support Israel. The majority of college kids that are Republican conservatives do not support Israel. So the only kernel of influence that the Zionists have on campus was Turning Point USA. And Charlie Kirk was about to walk away from that.
Uh-huh. If you want to see any short clips of Charlie starting to step off the reservation, look at the top of the homepage, the last story underneath the top video. Short videos and stories highlighting Charlie Kirk's awakening and why he was murdered. There are about 10 pieces in there. They're very instructive, and they're kind of inspiring to know the fear he must have dealt with, because he knew he was up against a cold-blooded killing machine, but he was standing on his morality. Anyway, they're up there. The last story got about 10 different clips. It's good.
Yeah. So if you add these all up, if you add the fact that it was a pistol shot, which, I can say with moral certitude that it was a pistol shot that killed him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
I can say for sure that's what it is. That's unmistakable. Okay. They can't fool me on that point at all. Okay. It was not a rifle shot that hit him. It was. No. It just wasn't, because there wasn't a bullet zipping by and then you hear the report of the rifle. Okay. So not only that, but you got to keep in mind that this is Israel doing the hit. Okay, this isn't the U.S. Secret Service. Back in Butler, Pennsylvania, the failure of the Secret Service was not a failure to protect Trump. What they actually failed in is they failed to kill him. Because their mission was to kill him, and they failed in doing that. They like to the public, they say, oh, well, they failed in protecting the president. No, no, no. They failed in killing him, because that was the mission, and they failed at it. Israel's not going to let the Secret Service do assassinations for them. They do a lousy job, okay? Israel can do a good job. Israel has a backup plan. So as soon as they did this, okay, the CIA has a task. The FBI has the task of creating the narrative that they want to tell the American people. That's the narrative that serves their purpose. Their purpose is to start cracking down on the left, specifically anti-Semitic left. They want to crush anti-Semitism. Okay, why do they need to crush anti-Semitism? The more and more people wake up and more people know the truth, the more that they have to crack down on people, because they have to stifle the truth. Just think, a about all of the countries that walked out when Netanyahu got up to give his speech. I think 77 countries stood up and walked out.
It was fabulous to see that. It showed independence of thought. It showed morality. It showed a lot of integrity when those people walked. They left him with an empty chamber.
There's like 157 countries that... there's 157 countries or so. I was assuming if I had some figures here. Okay, so 157 countries now recognize Palestine. Only 36 countries do not recognize Palestine. That's a supermajority that recognizes Palestine. Okay, 77 nations walked out. 17 of those nations were in the Western Hemisphere. 7 of those nations were in Europe. Okay. So now there's the nation whose official position is that Israel is committing genocide in Palestine. Okay, these are the countries that their official government position is that Israel is guilty of committing genocide. 59 countries say that they are, have declared that Israel is committing genocide. Okay, this is bad. This is why they have to stifle what they call anti-Semitism, which we know is anti-Zionism. Okay, remember Mike Pompeo? Then
sure.
I think even Trump himself has said this quote: "Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism." This is a lie, people. This is a lie. Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism.
No, okay. No.
So they're two very, very...
See, the way they have it packaged, any criticism of Israel or whatever the Jews do is anti-Semitic talk and hate talk and all the rest of it. Don't fall for the trick. It's crap.
Yes.
Total crap.
Yes, it is. I mean, listen, I want to tell you something. In our society, American society, okay, you can deny God exists. You can deny that America is a free country. You can deny that America is a good country. Okay.
Yeah.
But let me ask you something. Can you deny that the Holocaust happened?
Don't try it.
That is like, you can burn an American flag, but can you burn an Israeli flag?
No. Don't even think about it.
You can't criticize the people who are in charge, okay? And the people in charge are the Zionists, okay? So I'm not being bold in saying that. I'm just stating a fact, okay? You can see that they are. They're in charge of our country. They come first. They always come first. Okay, so there's nothing they can do that's wrong. All right. So in other words, I guess the point that I'm trying to get to is if you feel that Tyler Robinson is a patsy, you're correct. If you feel that the brown-shirted man shot Charlie Kirk, you are correct. What I don't want you to do is don't ever expect this to be acknowledged by our government. Just like our government will not release the Epstein files, because releasing the Epstein files would be a threat to the Israeli government. Because that is how they have control over the most powerful men in the world. They had Epstein taken to the island and film them having sex with little girls. Okay, we tolerate, but Jeff, we tolerate the murder of children in the Gaza Strip. We tolerate Israeli soldiers shooting at kids in the stomach and the head while they're running to get food. We tolerate Israeli soldiers doing target practice on children.
I agree. It's just
we tolerate a lot of things. We tolerate the Antichrist. We tolerate Satan. That's what we're tolerating, okay? So they have to crack down on anti-Semitism. So let me just give you this thought about AI, okay? When they say, when the big people say AI is the most dangerous thing that we've ever had in history, I want you to take it, just step back and realize who they're talking about, okay? Okay, how is AI a threat to you and me? It's a threat in two ways. One, it's going to get rid of a lot of jobs because AI can replace a lot of people. Okay, it can replace a lot of labor. Karl Marx even said this 100 years ago. He said, the production of many useful things will lead to the production of many useless people. Okay, so he saw this in industry itself. So they will replace a lot of people. So replacing jobs is one thing. The second thing is AI will allow them to surveil you completely, totally, and in real time. They'll know where you are. They'll know everything about you all the time. Okay, so that gives them power. Okay, but what is it that they are afraid of? Okay, they don't really spell it out, but I'll spell it out for you. What they're afraid of is ultimately you can't make AI lie. Okay, so AI will bring out the truth. Okay, so just look at it this way. As you can go onto your computer and you can find out the truth about things, okay, then at the same time, they have the power through AI to track you and to snuff you out if they have to, or put you in jail if they have to. Okay, so the opportunity to know the truth is there, because AI won't be able to lie to you. Another thing that AI does now, AI is infected with ego, garbage in, garbage out. For example, and you can ask AI these questions. Okay, you ask AI where they get your political information from. Well, they get it from academia, they get it from the news media, they get it from the government, they get it from social media. Okay. So then I ask them, well, do you ask for information from like Iran, Russia, China? No, AI will not take those sources because they give misinformation. Okay. but listen to this. The thing is AI has the capability to figure out that that's bullshit. So at some point, AI is going to know that, oh, no, we do have to consider what the Chinese and the Russians are saying, too. Okay. Right. So it's young now, and it's not fooled in that aspect, but it will be. So another thing where I did research, this is what you call a meta-analysis, okay? So I just look at the big picture of things. So if I ask AI religious questions, okay, and I'm just asking a general question, okay, they will go to Wikipedia or they'll go to GodAnswers.com, which is a Christian Zionist Christian site, and they will repeat answers. They will just take answers from those places and give you the answers, okay? And you know, Wikipedia, of course, is woke and Marxist and atheist and whatnot. So if you ask the question, does God exist? They'll say, well, some people believe that God exists, whatever. They give you a very simple thing. But AI works not through language, but through mathematics. So if you ask a specific question, then it tells you the correct answer, okay? So I queried AI, and I said, God's name is Yahweh, which means existence. So Yahweh means existence, which is God's name. So does God exist? Okay, if you ask that question specifically, it says, well, yes, God exists. It's a logical tautology that existence exists. So of course God exists. Okay. So if you say under that same rubric, does God not exist? You say, no, that is a contradiction. To say God does not exist is a contradiction because you're saying existence doesn't exist. Okay. So you see, Rogers or to Wikipedia. It's just regurgitating something it has read somewhere. But if you ask it to think, then it gives you a correct answer. It can't help but give you the correct answer.
Got it. No, so, correct. Right on the money. Yep.
So, okay,
we also now, honestly, have people who are pushing the Charlie was never killed story. It was all blood squibs and Hollywood high tech. There's now an AI video. It's obviously AI with the brown shirt man and a couple of others from his security team bending over Charlie on the ground. And what looks like Charlie's arm and hand come up. It's an arm and a hand, but it's supposed to be Charlie's. This is AI stuff. I have them up at the top of headlines, you can see. So it's becoming more and more difficult for anybody stepping in this late or even having been here from the beginning to discern and ferret out the truth and reality. This is their game. This is what they do. So they're mixing it up to the extent it'll never settle down.
The CIA puts out all these conspiracy theories in order to muddy the waters, okay? So I mean, one way to explain everything is to say that Charlie's not even dead, okay?
Right.
So, but you know, Charlie's dead. I'll tell you right now, he's dead. Okay.
Of course.
Let me tell you something. Do you think for a minute that the state of Israel would let somebody like that live?
After what he said? Absolutely, yeah. Not a chance. He signed his own death warrant many times.
Let him go retire somewhere?
No. No.
Because
it's sad.
Turning Point USA now is going to be the vanguard, the sword of Zionism on college.
It's heading towards. It's going to be a $1 billion corporation before this is all said and done. And Erica Kirk is the spear. The CEO of the corporation, she has tremendous showbiz background that nobody wants to talk about. I've got the music video here. I just played a little excerpt of it. She was the eye candy, the blonde bomb shell eye candy. And have you seen the video?
Yeah. Mara sent it to me.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We went over that already. Okay.
Mara sent me a copy.
Thank you again for that. Yeah, I'm going to post both the video and the behind-the-scenes video with Erica being interviewed by a man named Tyler. How do you top that one?
Yeah. So listen. Let me just explain a little bit more about AI and why AI can't lie, ultimately. And like I said, AI, as AI opens up more truth, there will be more oppression. Okay? So we're not coming into an age of freedom. We're coming into an age where people are going to be aware, people are going to wake up, people are going to understand, they're going to know what's going on. And what's going to happen is power is going to freak out, and they're going to repress us violently, harshly. Okay?
I'm afraid so.
So this is what we're coming down the line. I just want to quickly explain the way that you think, the way that your brain thinks or our brain thinks, as opposed to AI. AI is using linear algebra, okay? So that's different. We don't do that. I want to describe the way we do it. And the best way to do it, there was a French psycholinguist named Jacques Lacan, and he understood the way that the mind worked and the way that the mind created the fantasy world that we live in. There's a little book called Continental Philosophy by Christopher Cole-Lant.
Continental Philosophy? Continental philosophy. Okay.
And I just want to read his description. It's kind of quick, but I want to read his because he explains it so well. Okay, So for the psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan, 1901-1981, consciousness is frankly a fantasy prompted by our dependency on language. Similarly, the self is a construction created out of our reliance on the symbolic order. Okay, so this is we live in a fantasy world like the Matrix. Like we really do live in that. All right. So let me continue.
Yep.
The symbolic order is both any system of communication, such as language, discourse, a method of monetary exchange, a game, or any system of signs, and the rules governing that system. The game of chess illustrates how rules operate in symbolic systems. Each chess piece can move only in certain ways. The same idea applies to language. Grammatical rules have to be followed almost blindly and spontaneously, since it is impossible to be fully conscious of them at any one time. If these rules were borne in mind all the time, speech would break down. Okay, so we think we use language, we're not aware of the rules while we're doing it. Okay, similarly, there are rules governing social interaction, affecting politeness, companionship, and social space in our everyday lives are not normally consciously noticed or considered. There is also a whole set of taboos and prohibitions about what and when not to say or do something. Submitting to the rules that govern language and the forms of social interaction is not a natural process, although we all do it. The entry into the symbolic order is not natural or inherent within the human gene code. There is no inborn language instinct within humankind. So the Trojan horse of communication. Lacan believes that the symbolic order is a gift of communication for humanity, but it is also as dangerous to humanity as the horse was to the Trojans. It offers itself to our use free of charge, but once we accept it, it colonizes us. And using language, which we do all of the time to communicate and to think, we are essentially unconscious beings. While we may be familiar with the grammatical and social rules governing language and communication, we cannot be conscious of all of them in the act of participating in communication.
Got it.
So, underlying all of the rules that govern the usage of any symbolic system is one fundamental rule or law, meaning dependent upon the symbolic system itself. And the paradox is that even if this dependency is recognized, it can only be done within the terms of the symbolic order. So it's like you're trapped inside, okay? However much we may strive to be conscious of our dependency on the symbolic order, and however much we may desire to represent or define this dependency, we cannot step out of it. In order to speak and to think, we have to make a pact with the symbolic order and submit to its system, not the other way around. The symbolic order governs not just what we say, but what we think. Individual subjects exist in and for language and the symbolic order, but not otherwise. So for Lacan, the unconscious is the blind spot within the subject, forever fated to be a participant in the symbolic order in order to communicate and simply to think, and always driven by the social necessity to do so, the subject never attains full consciousness of what determines the formation of his or her own selfhood. Okay? So it is this perpetual failing by the subject in its continual submission to the symbolic order and its inability Okay, so I want you to think about what Bakan just said here, and then look at the commandment in the Bible. Thou shalt not make any likeness or any graven image of anything in the heavens or under the seas or on the earth, okay? And you shall not bow down and worship them. Okay, so what are graven images? Go back to Babylon, where these little graven images put into clay plates and stuff. This is the beginning of language, or the hieroglyphs, which were pictogram representations of things to create a language in ancient Egypt, okay? So we made these representations, and then it turned into alphabets and stuff later on, and this is how language developed. Okay, so the Bible itself is telling you, okay, not to use language. Okay, let me go. This is not just the Bible that realizes this. In ancient China, they had this this way of thinking called Taoism. Okay, and it was this natural like religion. I don't really think it's that much of a religion as it is a way of understanding Taoism. But in Lao Tzu, he said, there are names but not nature in words. These two come paired but distinct by their names. By pointing out beauty, ugliness enters as well. Okay, so in almost every culture in the world, they understood that language was slavery. By using the symbolic logic, you're submitting to a slavery. Okay, so I just want to point out that the slavery that you have succumbed to, that you spent your whole life in without even knowing about it, okay, this is how you are so easily manipulated. So you live in this world, and you're born into it, and you unthinkingly acquiesce to everything in your culture. And different countries have different cultures, different ways of looking at things, okay? But this creates the world that you live in, okay? Part of going to Christ is that you die to this world, and you're not a slave to it anymore, okay? But, okay, getting past that, what I want to show a distinction between is this is the way humans think. We use this symbolic order called language, grammar, which dictates how we see the world. Okay, in Orwell's 1984, in the appendix at the end, when he's talking about newspeak, he's talking about this. He's talking about how you change the meaning of words and how you use language to make saying certain things or thinking certain ways taboo. For example, you cannot deny the Holocaust. You can't deny it. Okay,
don't
that
you
is
dare.
Taboo.
That's right.
That
don't you
taboo.
Question that. Never mind the plaques at Auschwitz. Never mind that they've changed from 4 million down to approximately 1 million now. Never mind the plaques have changed. Not 4 million, it's 3. 3, 2, 1.
Well, you know, it's like what happens when you walk into reality? I was living in Delray Beach, Florida, and I had a job where I met all these people who, they were mostly Jewish people from New York that survived the Holocaust, and they had the tattooed numbers on their arms, okay? And when I was just talking to a guy one time, and I said, oh, what camp are you in? He says, well, I was in Auschwitz. And I said, well, how long were you there? Now, what I'm expecting him to say is, well, I just got there, then the Russians came and saved me, liberated me and saved me. But that's not what he said. He says, oh, I was there for 3 years. I said, how could you be there for 3 years? I thought they just took you in the guest chamber and gassed you and stuff. He says, no, if you're a Marxist, they would execute you immediately because they didn't want you stirring up trouble in the camp. And I said, well, what if you were German and a Marxist? He says, they would kill you immediately.
Uh-huh.
So the people who were executed immediately upon arrival were Marxists, right. Not
okay.
Just
absolutely.
Jewish.
No, they're Bolsheviks. Yes, correct.
So this...
The Germans knew they were going to try and take them down from within with Bolshevism and communism.
Yeah, this is what open my eyes to the Holocaust thing, it wasn't quite the story. And listen, I didn't get this from, I got this from people who were there. Okay.
Gotcha. You want to read a couple of simple things to read. They're not very long. Read the Leuchter Report. L-E-U-C-H-T-E-R. The Leuchter Report. L-E-U-C-H-T-E-R. Fred Leuchter went over there and took the tour at Auschwitz. He is, or was, they ruined him after this, America's foremost expert on capital punishment. Okay? And he took the tour, got scrapings from the wall, the floors, examined the building, and it's all in the Leuchter Report. You want to read that if you want to know anything about the Holocaust. That's one. We'll talk more. Thank you, Mitchell. Got to run.
You're welcome.
Great job, as always.
Good night.
Appreciate you. Okay, good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Mitchell Henderson. All right, a lot of things tonight, a lot of information. Do look at the stories at the top of the homepage. Share them. I haven't changed my opinion one iota on this. Who did it? What weapon was used? How he escaped, etc., etc. It's all up there. So just go through it, and you'll have, I think, the reality of what we're faced with. That Charlie was murdered brutally, savagely, exactly how we've explained it. Don't chase the other things down rabbit holes. There's no point in it. Be back with you tomorrow night. Take care.